Chapter 9. A fortnight had passed since the events narrated in the last chapter, and the positions of the persons concerned were so completely changed that it is extremely difficult for us to continue our story without certain explanations. And yet we must, as far as possible, confine ourselves to the bare statement of facts, and for a very simple reason, because we find it difficult in many instances to explain what occurred. Such a preliminary statement on our part must seem very strange and obscure to the reader, who may ask how we can describe that of which we have no clear idea, no personal opinion. To avoid putting ourselves in a still more false position, we had better try to give an instance, and perhaps the kindly disposed reader will understand of our difficulty. And we do this the more readily as this instance will not make a break in our narrative, but will be the direct continuation of it. A fortnight later, that is, at the beginning of July, and in the course of that fortnight, the history of our hero, and particularly the last incident in that history, was transformed into a strange, very diverting, almost incredible, and at the same time conspicuously actual scandal, which gradually spread through all the streets adjoining Lebedev's, Titsin's, Darya Alexeyevna's, and the Epanchins' villas. In short, almost all over the town, and even the districts adjoining it. Almost all the society of the place, the inhabitants, the summer visitors, and the people who came to hear the band, were all talking of the same story told in a thousand variations. How a prince, after causing a scandal in a well-known and honourable family, and jilting a young girl of that family, to whom he was already betrothed, had been captivated by a well-known coquette, had broken with all his own friends, and, regardless of everything, regardless of threats, regardless of the general indignation of the public, was in a few days' time intending, with head erect, looking everyone straight in the face, to be openly and publicly married here in Pavlovsk to a woman with a disgraceful past. The story became so richly adorned with scandalous details, so many well-known and distinguished persons were introduced into it, and so many fantastic and enigmatical shades of significance were given to it, while on the other hand, it was presented with such incontestable and concrete facts that the general curiosity and gossip were, of course, very pardonable. The most subtle, artful, and at the same time probable interpretation must be put to the credit of a few serious gossips belonging to that class of sensible people who are always, in every rank of society, in haste to explain every event to their neighbours, and who find indeed their vocation, and often their consolation in doing so. According to their version, the young man was of good family, a prince, and almost wealthy. A fool, but a democrat, who had gone crazy over the contemporary nihilism revealed by Mr. Turgenev. Though scarcely able to speak Russian, he had fallen in love with the daughter of General Epanchin, and had succeeded in being accepted as her betrothed by the family. But like the Frenchman in a story that has just appeared in print, who had allowed himself to be consecrated as a priest, had purposely begged to be consecrated, had performed all the rites, all the bowings and kissings and vows and so on, in order to inform his bishop publicly next day that, not believing in God, he considered it dishonourable to deceive the people and be kept by them for nothing, and so had renounced the priesthood he had assumed the day before, and sent his letter to be printed in all the liberal papers. Like this French atheist, the prince had played a false part. It was said that he had purposely waited for the formal evening party given by the parents of his betrothed, at which he was presented to very many distinguished personages, in order to declare his way of thinking aloud before everyone, that he had been rude to venerable old dignitaries, had renounced his betrothed publicly and insultingly, and, in struggling with the servants who led him out, had broken a magnificent china vase. It was stated as characteristic of the tendencies of the day that the senseless man really was in love with his betrothed, the general's daughter, and had renounced her simply on account of nihilism, and for the sake of the scandal it would lead to, so that he might have the gratification of marrying a lost woman in sight of all the world, and thereby proving his conviction that there were neither lost nor virtuous women, but that all women were alike, free. that he did not believe in the old conventional division, but had faith only in the woman question, that in fact a lost woman was in his eyes somewhat superior to one who was not lost. This explanation sounded extremely probable, and was accepted by the majority of the summer visitors, the more readily as it seemed to be supported by daily events. It's true that a great number of facts still remained unexplained. It was said that the poor girl so adored her betrothed, according to some people, her seducer, that on the day after he threw her over, she had to run to find him where he was sitting with his mistress. Others maintained, on the contrary, that she had been purposely lured by him to his mistress's simply for the sake of nihilism, that is, for the sake of shaming and insulting her. However that may have been, the interest in the story grew greater every day, especially as there remained not the slightest doubt that the scandalous marriage really would take place. And now, if we should be asked for an explanation, not of the nihilistic significance of the incident, oh no, but simply how far the proposed marriage satisfied Mushkin's real desires, what those desires actually were at that moment, how the spiritual condition of our hero was to be defined at that instant, and so on, we should, we admit, find it very difficult to answer. We can only say one thing, that the marriage really was arranged, and that Mushkin himself had authorized Lebediev, Keller, and a friend of Lebediev's, presented to Mushkin by the latter at this juncture, to undertake all necessary arrangements, religious and secular, that they were bidden not to spare money, that Nastasia Philipovna was insisting on the wedding and in haste for it, that Keller, at his own ardent request, had been chosen for the prince's best man, while Badovsky, who accepted the appointment with enthusiasm, had been chosen to perform the same office for Nastasia Philipovna, and that the wedding day had been fixed for the beginning of July. But besides these well-authenticated circumstances, some other facts are known to us which throw us completely out of our reckoning, because they are in direct contradiction of the proceeding. We have a strong suspicion, for instance, that after authorizing Lebediev and the others to make all the arrangements, Mushkin almost forgot the very same day that he had a master of ceremonies, and a wedding, and best men at hand, and that his haste in handing over arrangements to others was simply to avoid thinking about it himself, and even, perhaps, to make haste to forget about it. Of what was he thinking himself in that case? What did he want to remember, and for what was he struggling? There is no doubt, moreover, that no sort of coercion on Nastasia Philipovna's part, for instance, was applied to him, that Nastasia Philipovna certainly did desire a speedy wedding, and that it was she, and not Mushkin, who had thought of the wedding. But Mushkin had agreed of his own free will, somewhat casually indeed, as though he had been asked for some quite ordinary thing. Such strange facts are before us in abundance, but far from making things clearer to our thinking, they positively obscure every explanation, however we take them. But we will bring forward another instance. Thus we know for a fact that during that fortnight Mushkin spent whole days and evenings with Nastasia Philipovna, that she took him with her for walks and to hear the band, that he drove out in her carriage with her every day, that he began to be uneasy about her if an hour passed without his seeing her, so that by every sign he loved her sincerely, that whatever she talked to him about, he listened with a mild and gentle smile for hours together, saying scarcely anything himself. But we know, too, that in the course of those days he had several, in fact many times, called at the Epanchins, without concealing the fact from Nastasia Philipovna, though it had driven her almost to despair. We know that, as long as the Epanchins remained at Pavlovsk, they did not receive him, and consistently refused to allow him to see Aglaya Ivanovna, that he would go away without saying a word, and next day go to them again as though he had completely forgotten their refusal the day before, and of course be refused again. We know, too, that an hour after Aglaya Ivanovna had run away from Nastasia Philipovna, perhaps even less than an hour after, Mushkin was already at the Epanchins, confident, of course, of finding Aglaya there, and that his arrival had thrown the household into extreme amazement and alarm, because Aglaya had not yet returned home. And it was only from him the Epanchins had first learned that she had been with him to Nastasia Philipovna's. It was said that Lizaveta Prokofievna, her daughters, and even Prince S. treated Mushkin on that occasion in a very harsh and hostile way, and that they had there and then, in the strongest terms, renounced all friendship and acquaintance with him, the more emphatically that Varvara Ardalionovna had suddenly made her appearance and announced to Lizaveta Prokofievna that Aglaya had been in her house for the last hour in a fearful state of mind, and seemed unwilling to return home. This last piece of news affected Lizaveta Prokofievna more than anything, and it turned out to be quite true. On coming away from Nastasya Philipovna's, Aglaya would certainly sooner have died than have faced her family, and so she flew to Nina Alexandrovna's. Varvara Ardalionovna, for her part, felt it essential promptly to inform Lizaveta Prokofievna of everything, and the mother and daughters rushed off at once to Nina Alexandrovna's, followed by the head of the family, Ivan Fyodorovitch, who had just returned home. Mushkin trudged along after them, in spite of their dismissal of him and their harsh words. But Varvara Ardalionovna took care that there, too, he was not allowed to see Aglaya. The end of it was that, when Aglaya saw her mother and sisters shedding tears over her and not uttering a word of blame, she threw herself into their arms and at once returned home with them. It was said, though the story was not well authenticated, that Gavriil Ardalionovitch was particularly unlucky on this occasion, too, that seizing the opportunity while Varvara Ardalionovna was running to Lizaveta Prokofievna and he was left alone with Aglaya, he had thought fit to begin talking of his passion, that, listening to him, Aglaya had, in spite of her tears and dejection, suddenly burst out laughing, and had all at once put a strange question to him. Would he, to prove his love, burn his finger in the candle? Gavriil Ardalionovitch was, so the story went, petrified by the question. He was so completely taken aback, and his face betrayed such extreme amazement, that Aglaya had laughed at him, as though she were in hysterics, and to get away from him, ran upstairs to Nina Alexandrovna, where she was found by her parents. This story was repeated to Mushkin next day by Ippolit, who, being too ill to get up, sent for the prince on purpose to tell it to him. How Ippolit got hold of the story we don't know, but when Mushkin heard about the candle and the finger, he laughed so much that Ippolit was surprised. Then he suddenly began to tremble and burst into tears. Altogether, he was, during those days, in a state of great uneasiness and extraordinary perturbation, vague but tormenting. Ippolit bluntly declared that he thought he was out of his mind, but it was impossible to affirm this with certainty. In presenting all these facts and declining to attempt to explain them, we have no desire to justify our hero in the eyes of the reader. What is more, we are quite prepared to share the indignation he excited, even in his friends. Even Vera Lebedev was indignant with him for a time. Even Kolya was indignant. Even Keller was indignant, till he was chosen as best man, to say nothing of Lebedev himself, who even began intriguing against Mushkin, also from an indignation which was quite genuine. But of that we will speak later. Altogether, we are in complete sympathy with some forcible and psychologically deep words of Yevgeny Pavlovich's, spoken plainly and unceremoniously by the latter in friendly conversation with Mushkin 6 or 7 days after the incident at Nastasya Philipovna's. We must observe, by the way, that not only the Epanchins, but everyone, directly or indirectly connected with them, had thought proper to break off all relations with Mushkin. Prince S., for instance, turned aside when he met Mushkin and did not respond to his greeting. But Yevgeny Pavlovich was not afraid of compromising himself by visiting the prince, though he had begun visiting the Epanchins every day again and was received by them with an unmistakable increase of cordiality. He came to see Mushkin the very day after the Epanchins had left Pavlovsk. He knew already of all the rumours that were circulating, and had, perhaps indeed, assisted to circulate them himself. Mushkin was delighted to see him, and at once began speaking of the Epanchins. Such a simple and direct opening completely loosened Yevgeny Pavlovich's tongue, too, so that he went straight to the point without beating about the bush. Mushkin did not know that the Epanchins had left. He was struck by the news. He turned pale, but a minute later he shook his head, confused and meditative, and acknowledged that so it was bound to be. Then he asked quickly, where had they gone? Meanwhile, Yevgeny Pavlovich watched him carefully, and he marvelled not a little at all this, the rapidity of his questions, their simplicity, his perturbation, restlessness and excitement, and at the same time a sort of strange openness. He told Mushkin about everything, however, courteously and in detail. There was a great deal the latter had not heard, and this was the first person to visit him from the Epanchin circle. He confirmed the rumour that Aglaya really had been ill. She had lain for 3 days and nights in a fever without sleeping. Now she was better and out of all danger, but in a nervous and hysterical state. It was a good thing, he said, that now there was perfect harmony in the house. They tried to make no allusion to the past, not only before Aglaya, but also among themselves. The parents had already made up their minds to a trip abroad in the autumn, immediately after Adelaida's wedding. Aglaya had received in silence the preliminary hints at this plan. He, Evgeny Pavlovich, might very possibly be going abroad too. Even Prince S. might possibly go with Adelaida for a couple of months if business permitted. The general himself would remain. They had all moved now to Kolmina, their estate 15 miles out of Petersburg, where they had a spacious manor house. Princess Bielokonski had not yet returned to Moscow, and he believed she was staying on at Pavlovsk on purpose. Lizaveta Prokofievna had insisted emphatically that they could not stay on in Pavlovsk after what had happened. He, Yevgeny Pavlovich, had reported to her every day the rumours that were circulating in the town, and it did not seem possible for them to move to the villa at Yelagin. "And indeed," added Yevgeny Pavlovich, "you'll admit yourself they could hardly have faced it out, especially knowing what's going on here in your house every hour, Prince, and your daily calls there, in spite of their refusing to see you."
"Yes, yes, yes, you're right. I wanted to see Aglaya Ivanovna," said Mushkin, shaking his head again.
"Oh, dear Prince," cried Yevgeny Pavlovich, with warm-hearted regret. "How, then, could you allow all that's happened? Of course, it was all so unexpected. I understand that you must have been at your wit's end, and you could not have restrained the mad girl. That was not in your power, but you ought to have understood how intense and how much in earnest the girl was, in her feeling for you. She did not care to share you with another woman, and you could desert and shatter a treasure like that."
"Yes, yes, you're right, I am to blame," Mushkin began again in terrible distress. "And do you know she alone, Aglaya alone, looked at Nastasia Philipovna like that? No one else ever looked at her like that."
"Yes, that's just what makes it all so dreadful, that there was nothing serious in it," cried Yevgeny Pavlovich, completely carried away. "Forgive me, Prince, but I've been thinking about it, Prince. I have thought a lot about it. I know all that happened before. I know all that happened 6 months ago. And there was nothing serious in it. It was only your head, not your heart, that was involved. An illusion, a fantasy, a mirage. And only the scared jealousy of an utterly inexperienced girl would have taken it for anything serious." At this point, without mincing matters, Yevgeny Pavlovich gave full vent to his indignation. Clearly and reasonably, and, we repeat, with great psychological insight, he drew a vivid picture of Mushkin's past relations with Nastasia Philipovna. He had at all times a gift for language, and at this moment he rose to positive eloquence. "From the very first," he declared, "it began with falsity. What begins in a lie must end in a lie. That's a law of nature. I don't agree, and in fact I'm indignant when somebody calls you, well, an idiot. You're too clever to be called that. You're so strange that you're not like other people. You must admit that yourself. I've made up my mind that what's at the bottom of all that's happened is your innate inexperience. Mark that word, innate, Prince, and your extraordinary simple-heartedness, and then the phenomenal lack of all feeling for proportion in you, which you have several times recognised yourself, and finally the huge mass of intellectual convictions which you, with your extraordinary honesty, have hitherto taken for real, innate, intuitive convictions. You must admit yourself, Prince, that from the very beginning, in your relations with Nastasia Philipovna, there was an element of conventional democratic feeling. I use the expression for brevity. The fascination, so to say, of the woman question, to express it still more briefly. I know all the details of the strange, scandalous scene that took place at Nastasia Philipovna's when Rogozhin brought his money. If you like, I will analyse you to yourself on my fingers. I will show you to yourself as in a looking-glass. I know so exactly how it all was, and why it all turned out as it did. As a youth in Switzerland, you yearned for your native country. and longed for Russia as for an unknown land of promise. You had read a great many books about Russia. Excellent books, perhaps, but pernicious for you. You arrived in the first glow of eagerness to be of service, so to say. You rushed, you flew headlong to be of service. And on the very day of your arrival, a sad and heart-rending story of an injured woman is told you. You, a virginal knight, and about a woman. The very same day you saw that woman, you were bewitched by her beauty, her fantastic, demoniacal beauty. I admit she's a beauty, of course. Add to that your nerves, your epilepsy. Add to that our Petersburg thaw, which shatters the nerves. Add all that day, in an unknown and to you almost fantastical town, a day of scenes and meetings, a day of unexpected acquaintances, a day of the most surprising reality, of meeting the three Epanchin beauties, and a glare among them. Then your fatigue and the turmoil in your head, and then the drawing-room of Nastasia Philipovna, and the tone of that drawing-room, and what could you expect of yourself at such a moment? What do you think?
Yes, 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 yes.
Mushkin shook his head, beginning to flush crimson.
Yes, that's almost exactly how it was. And do you know, I'd scarcely slept at all in the train the night before, and all the night before that, and was fearfully exhausted.
Yes, of course, that's just what I'm driving at, Yevgeny Pavlovich went on warmly. The fact's clear that you, intoxicated with enthusiasm, so to speak, clutched at the opportunity of publicly proclaiming the generous idea that you, a prince by birth and a man of pure life, did not regard a woman as dishonoured who had been put to shame, not through her own fault, but through the fault of a disgusting aristocratic profligate. Good heavens, of course one can understand it. But that's not the point, dear prince. The point is whether there was reality, whether there was genuineness in your emotions, whether there was natural feeling or only intellectual enthusiasm. What do you think? In the temple, the woman was forgiven. Just such a woman. But she wasn't told that she'd done well, that she was deserving of all respect and honour, was she? Didn't common sense tell you within 3 months the true state of the case? But even granting that she's innocent now, I won't insist on that, for I don't want to, but could all her adventures justify such intolerable, diabolical pride? Such insolence, such rapacious egoism? Forgive me, Prince, I let myself be carried away, but
yes, all that may be so. Maybe you are right,
Mushkin muttered again.
She certainly is very much irritated.
And you're right, no doubt, but deserving of compassion. That's what you mean to say, my kind-hearted friend. But how could you, out of compassion for the sake of her pleasure, put to shame another, a pure and lofty girl, humiliate her in those haughty, those hated eyes? What will compassion lead you to next? It's an exaggeration that passes belief. How can you, loving a girl, humiliate her like this before her rival? Jilt her for the sake of another woman in the very presence of that other, after you had yourself made her an honourable offer. And you did make her an offer, didn't you? You said so before her parents and her sisters. Do you call yourself an honourable man after that? Allow me to ask you, Prince, and didn't you deceive that adorable girl when you told her that you loved her?
Yes, yes, you're right. Oh, I feel that I am to blame,
Mushkin replied in unutterable distress. But is that enough? Cried Yevgeny Pavlovich indignantly. Is it sufficient to cry out, "Ach, I'm to blame"? You are to blame, but yet you persist. And where was your heart then, your Christian heart? Why, you saw her face at that moment. Well, was she suffering less than the other, that other woman who has come between you? How could you have seen it and allowed it? How could you?
But I didn't allow it,
muttered the unhappy prince.
You didn't allow it? I really didn't allow anything. I don't understand to this hour how it all came to pass. I was running after Aglaya Ivanovna at the time, but Nastasia Philipovna fell down, fainting. And since then they haven't let me see Aglaya Ivanovna.
Never mind. You ought to have run after Aglaya, even if the other woman was fainting.
Yes. Yes, I ought to have.
She would have died, you know. She would have killed herself. You don't know her, and it made no difference. I should have told Aglaya Ivanovna everything afterwards, and
you see, Yevgeny Pavlovich, I see that you don't know everything. Tell me, why won't they let me see Aglaya Ivanovna? I would have explained everything to her. You see, they both talked of the wrong thing, utterly wrong. That's why it all happened. I can't explain it to you at all, but perhaps I could explain it to Aglaia. Oh, dear, oh, dear. You speak of her face at that moment when she ran away. Oh, dear, I remember it. Let us go, let us go. He jumped hastily up from his seat and pulled Yevgeny Pavlovich by the hand. Where are you going? Let's go to Aglaia Ivanovna. Let's go at once. But she's not in Pavlovsk now. I told you so. And why go to her? She will understand. She will understand, Mushkin muttered, clasping his hands imploringly. She would understand that it's all not that, but something quite different. How do you mean something quite different? Only you're going to marry her anyhow. So you persist in it. Are you going to be married or not?
Well, yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Then how is it not that?
No, it's not that, not that.
It makes no difference that I'm going to marry her. That's nothing, nothing.
How do you mean it makes no difference that it's nothing?
Why, it's not a trifling matter, is it? You're marrying a woman you love to make her happy, and Aglaia Ivanovna sees that and knows it.
How can you say it makes no difference?
Happy? Oh, no.
I'm only just marrying her. She wants me to. And what is there in my marrying her?
Oh, well, all that's no matter.
Only she would certainly have died. I see now that her marrying Rogozhin was madness. I understand now all that I didn't understand before. And you see, when they stood there facing one another, I couldn't bear Nastasia Philipovna's face.
You don't know, Yevgeny Pavlovich.
He dropped his voice mysteriously.
I've never said this to anyone, not even to Aglaia, but I can't bear Nastasia Philipovna's face. It was true what you said just now about that evening at Nastasia Philipovna's. But there is one thing you left out because you don't know it. I looked at her face. That morning, in her portrait, I couldn't bear the sight of it. Vera now, Lebediev's daughter, has quite different eyes. I'm afraid of her face,
he added with extraordinary terror.
You're afraid of it?
Yes. She's mad,
he whispered, turning pale.
You're sure of that?
Asked Yevgeny Pavlovich, with extreme interest.
Yes, sure. Now I'm sure. Now, during these last days, I've become quite sure.
But what are you doing, Prince? Yevgeny Pavlovich cried with horror. So you're marrying her from a sort of fear? There's no understanding it. Without even loving her, perhaps?
Oh, no. I love her with my whole heart. Why, she's a child.
Now she's a child, quite a child. Oh, you know nothing about it. And at the same time you have declared your love to Aglaia Ivanovna.
Oh, yes, yes.
How so? Then you want to love both of them?
Oh, yes, yes.
Upon my word, Prince,
think what you're saying.
Without Aglaia, I absolutely must see her. I shall soon die in my sleep. I thought I should have died last night in my sleep. Oh, if Aglaia only knew. If she only knew everything, absolutely everything, I mean. For in this case, one needs to know everything. That's what matters most. Why is it we never can know everything about another person, when one ought to, when that other one's to blame? But I don't know what I'm saying. I'm muddled. You've shocked me very much. And does her face look now as it did when she ran away? Oh, yes, I am to blame. Most likely it's all my fault. I don't know quite how, but I am to blame. There's something in all this I can't explain to you, Yevgeny Pavlovich. I can't find the words, but Aglaia Ivanovna will understand. Though I've always believed that she would understand.
No, Prince, she won't understand.
Aglaia Ivanovna loved you like a woman, like a human being, not like an abstract spirit. Do you know what, my poor Prince? The most likely thing is that you've never loved either of them.
I don't know. Perhaps so. Perhaps... You're right in a great deal, Yevgeny Pavlovich. You are very clever, Yevgeny Pavlovich. Oh, my head is beginning to ache again. For God's sake, let's go to her, for God's sake.
But I tell you, she's not in Pavlovsk. She's in Kolmina.
Let's go to Kolmina. Let's go at once.
That's impossible,
Yevgeny Pavlovich said emphatically, getting up.
Listen, I'll write to her. You take a letter.
No, Prince, no. Spare me such a commission, I can't.
They parted. Yevgeny Pavlovich went away with odd impressions, and in his judgment, too, the upshot of it was that Mushkin was not in his right mind. And what was the meaning of that face he feared so much and yet loved? And yet perhaps he really would die without seeing Aglaya, so that Aglaya never would know how much he loved her. And how can one love two at once, with two different sorts of love? That's interesting. Poor idiot. What will become of him now?